You are listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast. Welcome to this episode of Kapiti Poets, funded by the Creative Community Scheme via Kapiti Coast District Council, and also by the New Zealand Poetry Society and by generous donors via the boosted crowdfunding platform. I'm your host, Ingrid Prosser, performance poet from Paraparaumu, and I'm excited to welcome to the studio today Debbie Broughton, who lives in Waikanae Beach. My acquaintance with Debbie began through the pages of her book, The Aniwaka Room, which I found in the Paraparaumu Library. Opening it at random, I quickly realised that the contents are as interesting as the stunning cover of the book, so I got it out to read at home. Later on, when I confirmed that Debbie lives here on the coast, I became very excited at the thought of having her on the programme. Thank you so much for coming in to share with us, Debbie.
Tēnā koe, Ingrid. Ka mihi atu au ki a koe, o te rā ki a koutou katoa, he uri tēnei o Taranaki Tūturu, te aitanga a Hauiti, Ngāti Porou me Ngā Puhi. Tēnā tātou.
Thank you. Will you tell us how your poetic journey began? Were you writing in childhood?
Ooh, I wrote one poem that I remember as a child. It was about Halloween. I could almost quote it to you, but I won't. And I remember being really excited. It was the one time that we'd been kind of taught about poetry, and I really liked what I'd written. But it wasn't really encouraged when I was at school. We were very much put into, well, I was kind of put into the academic / sporty box.
Yes.
Which might sound good to some, but meant that I wasn't in the creative, arty box.
So
the next time I remember doing creative writing, I was a little bit older, so still in school. And I wrote this story about a whāngai, or someone whose grandmother had approached her mother, and she wanted to whāngai the baby. And I was super excited about that as well. I thought it was super clever, as you do.
Yeah.
I thought it was a super clever piece of writing. And when I got it back, I got a C. And I was devastated because I was super nerdy and wanted to get really good marks. And then it got moderated to an A. And then I was super confused. And I was like, I don't know if I'm really good at creative writing or if I'm really bad at creative writing.
Yeah.
So I'm just not going to do creative writing. And that was me for pretty much the next 20-odd years of my life. It was just something that I put to the side. I was like, that's not something I do, and carried on with my life.
Yes, it's amazing how many similar stories to that I've heard. And so many poets seem to have come back to poetry in their 30s.
Yes.
I think that's quite fascinating.
It is, and I think I would be writing very different poetry in my 20s to what I've written in my 30s and in my 40s. So I think I appreciate the fact that I didn't record all of my teenage or 20s angst, and I got to start writing again as a mum who'd seen a bit of the world had a point of view and things that I wanted to say.
So do you think when you were younger that you were gestating as a poet, that you know, from things you were reading, perhaps, were you inspired by writers, by poetry?
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't remember reading any poetry. But I grew up at a time when the things that I was reading didn't reflect my life at all. There were some New Zealand poets, there were some New Zealand writers. We definitely weren't encouraged to read them. And I read a lot. I think a lot of writers do read a lot. I absolutely loved reading and read everything from the Encyclopedia Britannica that my parents had, you know, every single book on the bookshelf at home multiple times. No, never poetry. It was nothing that was presented to me that I could see myself in or that I wanted to escape in.
Yes. So when you came to poetry again as a writer, as a mum in your 30s, what sparked that off?
I was working at a research organisation, And I was talking to someone there that was an editor. And I think something I said to him must have sparked a thought. And he brought me a book which was in multiple languages by an author who interchangeably used those languages. And she wrote poetry sometimes. She had songs in there. She did whatever she liked.
Mm.
And I flicked through this book and I literally light bulb moment and thought, oh, I can write whatever I like.
Yeah.
And it was like the floodgates were opened and I was writing about everything that I was seeing. I was living in Stokes Valley. I was writing about the colours people were wearing on the street. I was writing about work, writing about everything. And then I saw this advertisement for the Crew 260, which is a Māori and Pacifica creative writing course at IIML, which at the time was being curated by Hine Moana Baker and Tina Makiriti. And I really wanted to get out of work. So I somehow convinced my manager that this was related to my research job and would help me become a better writer. And ran up from work up to Vic a couple times a week and did this course. And in this course they presented us with all these authors, some of whom were known to me but I'd never really sought out their work, and others that were completely new to me, so Māori, Pacifica and Indigenous authors, and completely blew my mind as to what was possible in terms of storytelling and in terms of poetry as well.
So I'm thinking that on your website there is a recording to listen to, which I listened to a few days ago, of your hekoi, and that has Māori and English.
Yes.
And so that's one example of mixing, which you're obviously going to do.
You're
obviously going to mix these two languages, which is a great head start on meant for many of us.
So reo is definitely my second language, not my first language. So the majority of my poetry up until this year was in English with reo in it, everyday words. And words that naturally came out when I was writing. So it wasn't an intention to include it. It was just an intention not to exclude it when it was coming through in my writing. Kokiaki Te Oro was a hekoi along the Wellington waterfront, which reimagines it in 100 years' time. And it looks completely different because it is, again, Te Aro Pā. And the hapū, Ngāti Haumea, Ngāti Tūpaia of Te Aro Pā, and have now created their own version of Te Aro Pā in 100 years' time. That at first I had that translated by my partner because I wasn't confident in my reo, but I did another version this year for the Performance Arcade and it was projected onto the back of Te Papa, so 2-3 stories high.
Fantastic.
And I wrote the reo for that,
yeah.
For that abridged kind of version. I just got to the stage where I was like, no, actually, Debbie, you need to just back yourself and put my language out there. And again, it's because it's a poem, I'm like, this is how I would say it. It may not be grammatically correct. If we had a professor of Te Reo Māori analyse it, there will be lots of mistakes in there. But this is my language and this is how I want to say it.
Yeah.
So there's been a bit of a development there, a bit of a shift in my use of language as well.
Yeah, that's great. Wow. Okay, so before we go on, let's have a poem.
Okay, yes.
So this is a poem from your book, The Ani Waka Room, which I mentioned earlier and we'll say more about a bit later. Will you tell us a little bit about the poem first?
Absolutely. So I started writing this poem before I went to a workshop with Whaia Queenie Rikihana, who is another very well-known kapiti writer. And during her workshop, the poem morphed and became what this is. So this was actually written at our rancho in Waikanae, and there's a link between Waikanae and my ancestors who were on the heke from Taranaki through Waikanae, stayed here for quite a while, and then went through to Te Aro Pā.
Great.
So the poem's called If You Don't Like My Look, Then Don't Look Then. Location, Waikanae, which it turns out is less random than you realise. Type of sight, not what people expect. Scene, mirror gazing. I've been told I don't look like I'm from Taranaki, that I don't have that Taranaki look about me. I don't know what the Taranaki look looks like. I think I do look like Piriira. Our hair billows out from our heads in the shape of our maunga. I have Ani's nose, slightly too big for our faces, broad but not flat. I have my granddad's eyes, round moon eyes. I've been told I don't sound like I'm from Taranaki, that my reo has too many hard fizz and not enough soft whiz. But my ancestors' stories still fall from my lips and trip across my pages, even if I don't sound like you want me to sound. I've been told I should go back to where my Taranaki ancestors came from. I don't know where in Taranaki my ancestors came from. My mum doesn't know where in Taranaki my ancestors came from. I wonder if my granddad knew where in Taranaki my ancestors came from. But we know they were on the heke from Taranaki to Te Aropa. And we know their names. We know their names. We know their names.
Thank you very much. I love the honesty of that poem and the way it speaks to so many people, so many of us. It's speaking to us very clearly. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that's part of when we go really specific and talk about our world, somehow it becomes very general and people can relate to what it is we have to say when we give the detail. Yeah. People can draw that detail out of their own memories as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. Yes. So as we said, that was from your book, The Ani Waka Room, which was published in 2022 by Te Takupu, the publishing arm of Te Wananga o Rokawa, which is based in Otaki here on the Kapiti Coast. So we'll talk about the book a bit more in a minute. First of all, I'd like to ask you about the way in which your work was first published, inverted commas, in 2017, because it wasn't in a book, wasn't in a magazine, but in quite an extraordinary way, really. Will you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So following the crew workshop that I did, Tina asked me if I would consider putting in a proposal to the Courtney Place Light Boxes, which is run by the council, and you go through an application process for that. And she thought that my writing would fit really well, and I was super excited because Courtney Place is Te Aropa, literally.
Right.
Aropa.
Yes.
So with Tina's massive experience, we were successful in having the exhibition accepted by the council.
Yeah.
And I had my poems designed. We had a couple of designers we worked with who did an incredible job of designing up the poems and putting them into the light boxes. It is quite extraordinary. I think I didn't realise at the time just how important it was and how unique it was as well to have so many of your poems displayed in a public place for months at a time.
Yeah. It was something like 4 months, I think.
Yeah. So lots of opportunity for people to walk past and ignore them, or for people to walk past and engage with them. It was super special to be able to have those stories, those little bites or poems, poems of our day-to-day life and my conversations between me and my cousins and all those questions that I had about who we were and where we were from, to have those just publicly displayed for people to engage with.
And there were different colours, weren't there? It was quite strong, very eye-catching.
Each of the poems were designed up and very, very tall. I don't know the exact dimensions of these light boxes, but they're huge. And as I again, didn't think of beforehand, they light up, hence the name light box. They light up at nighttime.
Yeah.
And what we found when we got our photographer's photos back was that the pa was reflected onto the light boxes. So we had signs from shops and lights from cars reflecting onto the light box, and adding to the stories that were within the boxes as well. So they were static but very alive and changing as well with the lights around them.
I actually looked up the Wellington Council website, and they're 3 meters high, those light boxes.
Three meters.
They're pretty big. Yeah. So I think some of the little bits of poem that were on the light boxes are in your book, aren't they?
Yes, they are. There's a section in the book of the Magical Māori Mystery Tour of Wellington.
Excellent. Great. So we're going to talk about the book now, published in 2022, as I said, and are copies still available for purchase?
Absolutely. So they're available through Te Takapu website.
Yes, that's great. That's excellent. And the book is also available in our local library system, and there are 10 copies of it, which is wonderful. 7 on the Kapiti Coast in Ōtaki, Waikanae, Paraparaumu and Paikakariki, 2 in Porirua and 1 in Moira in Lower Hutt. And the copies on the coast all have Kapiti rites on the spine, which is how you can easily see them if you're going along the library shelves, and that's what first caught my attention. Let's hear another couple of little poems now from the book.
Absolutely. So I'm going to read 2 poems which are related to each other. The first one is called Things I Knew About My Granddad When He Was Alive. Number 1, he was called Len, short for Leonard. Number 2, he and Nanny ran Miller's Whangara store. Number 3, he moved to Dannevirke when I was 8. Number 4, he lived in a big house with a big garden on Swinburne Street. Number 5, he had a green rocking chair that sat in the lounge in front of the TV. Number 6, I'd sneak onto his chair and he would sneak up behind me and pretend to tip me out. Number 7, when he had a migraine, we weren't allowed to play the piano. Number 8, he died the day before my 12th birthday. Things I didn't know about my granddad when he was alive. Number 1, he was Māori. Number 2, he was from Taranaki Iwi.
Thank you. And I know that discovery was a major thing for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was major and it was gradual at the same time. I definitely knew I was Māori growing up. My dad's Ngāti Porou, Ngāpuhi, Te Aitanga Hawiti, so I knew that. But I just didn't really click that was part of my mum's whakapapa as well. So, and, you know, extrapolating out from that, I didn't realise that my granddad was Māori.
Yeah.
It was nothing, that identity was, I didn't tie to my granddad at all.
Yeah.
Not to say that he didn't feel that way, but as a child, it wasn't something that I knew.
Yes, understand that. Great. As well as sharing the written word, performing the spoken word is also important to you, isn't it?
I think it's possibly more important than sharing the written word.
Yeah.
Because we have the opportunity to get out onto the streets and where people are, to marae, to libraries, to community centres, art galleries, and share these stories which people aren't necessarily going to pick up, aren't necessarily going to go to a library or order a book online, but may just be in that space.
Yeah. So you perform with your cousins as Te Aro Pā poets, and do you perform on your own as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So my first performance was by myself at Te Aro Pā. And then... yeah, absolutely. I perform individually, but a lot of the time the material's quite similar. But when you're performing as a group, there's some negotiation that will go on in terms of what order you're going to do things. You have to create a set.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas as an individual, I have that freedom to kind of order things and select pieces as I want to. So I enjoy both of those.
Do you sometimes respond to the audience when you're performing on your own, so that you might think to yourself, oh, I'm not going to do that one after all, I'm going to do this one instead, or change the order or something?
100%. I think there are poems that fit really well with performance,
yeah,
and others that actually sit a lot better on the page. And I think that's one of the great things about performing, is you can respond to the crowd,
yes,
and the mood and the vibe, and definitely interact a lot more.
Yeah. Great. Okay, well, let's hear another poem from the book now, and it's the title poem, isn't it?
Yes, it's The Aniwaka Room. In the Waitoi community hub in Johnsonville, aka another name that doesn't involve anyone with the surname Johnson, aka Wirumitaone, on the ground floor next to the Akane'i room, there are several pepper-potted men meeting in the Aniwaka room, and I don't care. I take selfies with the white letters Aniwaka anyway, and when one of the men stands and firmly closes the door, I don't even care. Because our kaumātua recognised our ancestor, Aniwaka Durling, Ni Bluit, and her relationship with this wenua by naming this room after her, our ancestor. And no, it's not a marae, and no, it's not a ware tūpuna, and no, it's not a ware kai, but I don't care. It connects our wānau to Omia Street, to Ngāti Omia, to Taranaki Iwi, to Te Aro Pā, to Opunake, to Taranaki. It means she was here, which means we were here, which means we mattered, which means we matter. Like not even just us generally, but us specifically. Ngā uri o Aniwaka, raua ko Leonard James Durling. And pinned to the wall inside the Aniwaka room are A4 photocopies with photos of Aniwaka, her mother Anite Kai, and her father Charles Bluit, Anite Kai's sister Hana Te Awitu, and Aniwaka's husband Leonard James Durling. And even though they're photocopies, not actually photos, I don't care. Because it's the first time I've ever seen photos of my tūpuna from Taranaki on someone else's wall, apart from on the wall of Te Aro Pā Visitor Centre. And when I come back the next month, my cousin Geraldine's there to welcome us, which is unsurprising and also kind of perfect. And I'm thinking, should we mi'i to our tūpuna? And I'm not one for karakia, but I feel like I could bust one out. And also, should we be doing a mōtiatia? A taranaki waiata? Do we both know one? The same one? And oh my God, will I cry if we do that? Because crying's kind of full on for the first time you meet your cousin. Not that I think she would really care. And once I'm in our tūpuna's room, I'm thinking about how we could maybe elevate the room a little. I mean, it's new and nice, for sure, with its grey tables and grey carpet and grey walls. But we could make it feel more like home, like change some of the grey to something not grey. What about black? And maybe put a sign up saying no shoes? And what about eating? Do we want people eating in here? I mean, we ate in here, and I don't think we were the first people to eat in here, but also what is the kawa in here? What about for wakatau? Will women be able to sit in the front row of the wakatau? Will women speak during the wakatau? Because wouldn't it be pointless to name a room after a woman and then not allow women, apart from kai karanga, to speak during wakatau? Not that I care about these things. Because in the Waitoi community hub in Johnsonville, aka another name that doesn't involve anyone with the surname Johnson, aka Wirumitaone, on the ground floor next to the Akane'i room is the Aniwaka room.
We've almost come to the end of the interview. We've only got just a little bit of time left. Can you quickly tell us how long you've been living on the Kapiti Coast?
Oh, I've been here for around 8 years now, so it feels like quite a while. Most of that at Otaki Beach and now just recently at Waikanae Beach.
Yeah, great, lovely. We'll have to save for another time a discussion about how the Kapiti Coast influences your writing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, it's been really super to talk with you, Debbie. Thank you very much for coming in to share with us.
Oh, he mihi nunui kia koe hoki, Ingrid, mō tō whakapau kaha ki te tautoko i ngā kaitui o Kapiti. Nō reira, tēnā koe.
So in a moment, we'll finish the programme with one more poem. Firstly, I'd like to say once more, thank you very, very much to our generous and supportive funders, the Kapiti Coast District Council for the Creative Community Scheme funding, which comes from Creative New Zealand, the New Zealand Poetry Society, and individuals via the boosted crowdfunding platform. Let's have the final poem now.
Te Aropa. Location, Te Aropa Visitor Centre, 39 Taranaki Street, Te Aro. Type of site, pa, with an apartment building on top. Condition, pretty nice really. I visit Te Aropa, or what remains of it anyway. I sit there on the concrete floor and listen to the screech and high-pitched whining of construction machinery. I sit there on the concrete floor and watch the sliding door open and close, even when there's no one near it. I hope someone will find their way through the door. Someone I can share my wakapapa with. Someone I can share my connection to this wenua with. So I can say, look, it's me. It's us. We are here. We are still here.
You have been listening to Kapiti Poets, a programme highlighting both established and up-and-coming writers of poetry on the Kapiti Coast.
This programme was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio with support from New Zealand On Air.